The views expressed on this program are not necessarily the views of this station. Content is for educational purposes only. Consult a financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence if investing. Calls are pre-screened and the show was pre-recorded earlier this week. Rick is with Edelman Financial Engines, a part of Financial Engines Advisors, LLC, and the investment advisor that furnishes this program. Barron's ranks financial advisory firms based on assets managed, team size, experience, and regulatory record. Firms self-nominate. Investment returns and experience are not considered. Advisors in the Hall of Fame have been in the top 100 for 10 plus years. Future performance is not guaranteed.
This is an encore presentation of The Rick Edelman Show.
This is The Rick Edelman Show. Barron's ranks Edelman Financial Engines the number one independent investment advisor in the country. And Rick is in the Barron's Financial Advisor Hall of Fame. Now, here's Rick Edelman.
Very happy holiday weekend to you. Yes, it's still a holiday weekend. Christmas is behind us. Hanukkah soon will be. But New Year's is ahead of us here on The Rick Edelman Show. And I want to talk about New Year's Eve. Are you going to New York? Are you going to go to Times Square to watch the ball drop? Think about this. 2 million people will be in Times Square for New Year's Eve. If you plan on going, you've got to arrive very, very early because they now have been doing this ever since 9/11. They cordon off sections of Broadway to handle security as well as pedestrian traffic flow and such. And those 2 million folks get there really early to get their spot to watch the ball drop. They don't allow bags. They don't allow backpacks. They don't allow alcohol. They don't allow you to move around once you're in your spot in these cordoned off areas. That's it. You ain't going anywhere. And that means no restrooms. There's nowhere to go to the restroom. The very few restaurants and bars that are open in the area do not allow the public in unless you have a reservation and you're dining in that establishment. You can't use their facilities, which means if you're going to get there in time for the ball drop at midnight, you need to arrive by 11 in the morning. You're going to be there for maybe 12 hours or more. Think about that for a second. So you know what a lot of people do? Since they are in a place outside where they can't leave, because if they leave, they're going to be kicked out and never to come back. They're not going to let you back in because the crowd will be too big. You'll lose your spot. You can't find a restroom. You can't leave your spot anyway to go, even if you could use a public restroom. And so what a lot of folks say they do is they wear an adult diaper. And this way, they could handle being in the crowd for 8 or 10 or 12 hours. Now, here's what I find so fascinating. The kids, and let's face it, they are mostly kids, right? They're kids in their 20s, maybe late teens, and perhaps into their early 30s as well, who are doing this out of incredible excitement and fun and enthusiasm, have never done this before. These are people who have never before worn an adult diaper. So the question I ask is, here's an idea. How about you wear one right now? You've never done it before. I'm just curious. I've never worn one either. I'm just curious. How much volume does an adult diaper hold? And how much does it weigh? I'm just wondering what it's like to stand around, walk around for hours. And look, we know that urine is warm. You know, it's body temperature, so not a big deal. But it gets cold once it leaves the body. And what's it like to stand there with this large mass of fluid between your legs for hours on end? Those who write about this stuff on the internet, and yeah, you can pretty much find everybody writing about everything on the internet, they say that it can be excruciatingly painful once it gets cold. And these temperatures could well be freezing into the late night hours of New Year's Eve. And I'm suspecting that the vast majority, perhaps all of these revelers, have never worn an adult diaper. How do they even know how to put it on? What if they don't put it on correctly? What if you do put it on correctly and you do use it at 3 in the afternoon What do you do at 10 o'clock that night? How long can you hold it? How often might you need to use it? How much volume can this diaper hold? And what happens if you, you know, exceed the diaper's capacity? And here's what's even more fascinating. Even those who might be smart enough to say, I think I better try it on now before I go to New York, before I get to Times Square, make sure I know how to put it on and make sure I can put my jeans on over it. Okay. But I think in addition to wearing it as a trial, you should actually use it as a trial. And let's make sure it operates as you're expecting it to operate. Because better to figure all this out while you're in the comfort of your home, when you can relieve yourself of the diaper itself, rather than discovering in the middle of Times Square at 4 in the afternoon that, oops, you should have thought more about this. Okay, now you're wondering, why am I talking about all this on a personal finance show? The odds are you're not going to Times Square on New Year's Eve, and even if you do, odds are even better that you're not going to attempt to handle the trip with an adult diaper. Why am I talking about this? And would I please stop talking about this? Here's why. It's an illustration that people often embark on an exercise of which they have no experience. And they sometimes take a little bit of a Pollyanna attitude. Oh, it'll be fine. Oh, it'll all work out. Well, let me ask you this question. How much income are you going to have in retirement? And are you going to be able to live on that income in retirement? Or say that you're about to have a baby and you're assuming that one of you is going to quit working for a period of time, going from a two-income household to a one-income household, and you're saying, oh, it'll be fine. We'll work it out. In retirement, without my big paycheck at work, I'm going to live on my smaller Social Security income or my meager savings and investment income, and oh, it'll be fine. Or I'm planning to buy a new house, and there will be larger expenses, and I'll just cut back on going out to dinner. I just won't travel as much. Oh, it'll be fine. How do you know? Why wait, in other words, until the event occurs to test the thesis as to whether or not you'll succeed? Why wait until you get to Times Square to prove the theory? So if you are planning to retire and living on a certain income at that time, if you are planning to buy a house that will have a certain amount of expenses at that time, if you're about to have a baby and with it implications for household spending and household income, here's an idea. Start right now. Just as you should try on that diaper in your bedroom in the comfort of your home now, well in advance, days ahead of New Year's Eve, here's an idea. Act today as though you are retired. Act today as though you're in that new house. Act today as though the baby has arrived. Live right now on the income you say you're going to have to live on. Set aside the second paycheck that's going to go away. Pretend it no longer exists, because it one day, pretty soon, won't exist. Act right now that you're going to have the lifestyle that you know is soon coming. If you can't do it now while it's optional and voluntary, how are you going to be able to do it later when it's mandatory and required? Too often, we discover folks doing things for the very first time that they've never done before, have no experience engaging in, and are shocked to discover the details associated with it. Yeah, I bought my car, and sure, I can afford the monthly payment on the car. It didn't occur to me that the gas mileage is half of my old car, and my gasoline bill is now double. I wasn't planning on that. Yeah, I bought my new house, and I can afford the monthly payment, but my commute is further than it used to be. I'm spending more on fuel. Yeah, I got a new job and I got a raise, but at the new job, I've got to pay for parking, and I didn't have to do that at my old job. I didn't think about that. My old job allowed me to bring my lunch to work. My new job doesn't allow me to do that as effectively. I'm incurring extra costs that I wasn't anticipating. That's what financial planning is all about. Anticipating the future and making preparations for it today. One of the most effective things you can do for your planning is to act today as though the future is already here. If you need help figuring this kind of thing out, if you need help structuring your lifestyle accordingly, that's what we can do for you. Call us at 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-752-6742. Or visit us online at ricestellman.com. And while we might not be able to give you advice as to the best adult diaper to buy, we are able to ask you some questions about the lifestyle you're anticipating to help make sure you've thought it through correctly. I'm Rick Edelman. You're listening to, The Truth About Money.
More with the author of the 2008 Personal Finance Book of the Year, The Lies About Money, coming up on The Rick Edelman Show.
Welcome back to The Truth About Money. Rick Edelman here. We're starting off a new year. Good time to remind you that the key to investing successfully, that is to focus on the long term, not the latest headlines and the daily closes of the market. So we've put together some of our favorite phone calls from the past year that'll help demonstrate how important it is to maintain that long-term perspective and give you some other important considerations about saving and investing. And if you need help right now, call us at 888-PLAN-RICK or go to our website at rickedelman.com. That's ricestellman.com. Enjoyed today's show. Let's head off to Las Vegas. Travis is with us. How you doing, Travis?
Good. How are you doing, Rick?
Doing great. Thank you. How can I help?
So I've been hearing a lot about how interest rates are lower right now.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering how you know when it's a good time to refinance.
Oh, that's a really good question. We are actively encouraging a lot of our clients to refinance their mortgages right now. In other cases, we're telling them not to refinance. So how do you know the difference? When should you? It's a straight mathematical question, which makes it really easy to evaluate. Now, if you don't know how to do this, just call a financial advisor. You're welcome to call us. If you have a mortgage and you're thinking, should you refinance, we'll run the math for you and tell you the answer to the question. It's really very simple and easy to do when you've done it lots and lots of times. So here's what it comes down to, Travis, real simple. You take a look at your current mortgage payment. And so you know how much your mortgage payment is. What I also want you to determine is how much of your current mortgage payment is interest, because your payment is a combination of interest and principal. So what portion of your payment is interest? And are you taking a tax deduction for that interest? Not everybody does. People who take the standard deduction don't deduct the mortgage interest they pay. So what's the interest portion of your payment? And are you taking a tax deduction for it? Because that factors into the math that we're going to do. Now, that we've done for your current mortgage. Now we go over to the new proposed mortgage. We take a look, if you were going to refinance, what's the new lower interest rate you're going to get, and what's the new payment going to be? And again, remember, part of that payment is interest. In fact, with a brand new mortgage, most of the payment, almost all of it, is going to be interest. So again, if you're going to deduct it on your taxes, that makes it even cheaper to have. So it's the more you deduct, the cheaper the loan gets. Now we look at the difference between the two. Let's say, for example, that the new loan is $100 less than the current loan. And you would ordinarily say to yourself, golly, I can save $100 a month. I ought to go do it. But wait, there's one final piece of info that you've got to determine. What is the cost of obtaining that new loan? You see, every mortgage company charges fees, and there are a wide variety of fees associated with the process of getting or refinancing a mortgage. And those fees can be a good couple of thousand dollars. So let's say that the new loan saves you $100 a month, but let's also say it costs you $2,000 in order to do it. Well, that means it'll take you 20 months, nearly 2 years, to break even. And then the question becomes, do you plan on staying in the house for 2 years? Because if you're going to sell the house in 3 years, it probably really isn't worth it. If you're going to stay in the house for 10 years, then yes, it's a great deal. So it's that simple. I'll summarize it for you. You look at the cost of the current mortgage, you compare it to the cost of the new mortgage, and you see if the monthly savings are worth it compared to the cost of doing the whole thing in the first place.
Okay, that makes sense.
So like I said, if you don't know how to go through that math and do that evaluation, we'll do it for you. We're happy to do it. Just call us at 888-PLAN-RIC, and we'll run through the numbers, and we'll give you the answer. And it is, here's the good news. Like I said, it's just math. There's no emotion. There's no evaluation. There's no consideration. It's just arithmetic on a spreadsheet. So it's simple and easy to calculate, and we can tell you whether or not you really ought to. One related question that often comes up to this, Travis. What kind of a loan should you get? Should it be a 30-year loan or a 15-year loan? Should it be a fixed-rate loan or an adjustable-rate loan? So we would want to evaluate with you the answer to those questions as well. And the overwhelming majority of the time, we recommend a 30-year fixed-rate loan for reasons that we could get into in another time. But the bottom line is many people – millions of American homeowners right now could save a couple of $100 a month by refinancing their mortgages. So if you haven't refinanced lately, you really should take a look at this because you can save a lot of money.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Travis, it's my pleasure. Thank you for the call. I think that question is on a lot of people's minds, and I'm glad you raised it for us here on the program. I'm Rick Edelman. You're listening to The Truth About Money, 888-PLAN-RIC, online at ricestelman.com. Are you thinking of buying a house? Are you going to hire a real estate agent? Or are you going to try to use one of those online services that exists in an effort to avoid the real estate agent's commission? Well, the Consumer Federation of America has just issued a report warning of the high cost of using online services. They say the total cost of using an online service such as Opendoor, Keller Williams, Realogy, or Zillow is 13 to 15% of a home's price. A real estate agent's commission is typically 6%. In other words, the online services, all in, according to CFA, is more than double the cost of hiring a real estate agent. This is why we have told you for many, many years, in fact, our advice has been consistent on this forever, you should not try to buy a home without the aid of a professional real estate agent. You certainly shouldn't try to sell one without the aid of a professional real estate agent either, because you don't know what you don't know. How many houses have you bought and sold in your lifetime? Do you realize that professional real estate agents do that every month? The more often you do something, the better you are at it. And chances are, when folks are looking at, oh my goodness, look at the commission I got to pay the real estate agent, think of the money, think of the time, think of the aggravation, think of the risks that the real estate agent helps you avoid. And that's what their service is worth in terms of value. And so we strongly endorse and believe in the use of real estate agents. Be very careful if you're going to use an online service. I'm Rick Edelman. You're listening to The Truth About Money. Here's something that is a little bit concerning. Are you buying a new car? 32% of new car loans are for 6 to 7 years. 32%. One out of three of the people who are buying new cars are getting car loans for 6 to 7 years. A decade ago, only 12% of car loans were so long. This is a problem. You really shouldn't be doing this. You have to recognize the likelihood you'll really keep the car for 6 or 7 years. Because if you only keep the car 4 years, that's typically warranties are 4 years or less, you'll still owe more at the end of 5 or 6 years than the car is worth, which means you can't sell it without being upside down. So what do a lot of people do? A third of new car buyers, they take the money they owe on the old car and roll it over into the loan of the new car, which means they're not only borrowing money to buy the new car, they're using that loan to carry over the cost of the old car. You're now paying for two cars even though you only have one of them. Before you get a loan that is beyond 4 years on your car, talk with us here at Edelman Financial Engines to help us so that we can help you evaluate how much of a car can you really afford to buy so that you don't end up with too high a monthly payment for too long a period of time, obligating future income you haven't even yet earned to help you avoid this big dilemma. Issues such as buying a car is an important element in your broader financial planning. Don't ignore it. Get financial advice from a professional financial planner when you're ready to get your next automobile. Call us, 888-PLAN-REC. We're happy to help. Visit us online at ricestellman.com.
For free articles on personal finance, sign up for Rick's email update at rickedelman.com.
Want a financially secure retirement? Hi, Rick Edelman here. Let me tell you how we do it here at Edelman Financial Engines. We start with helping you figure out how much income you'll need in retirement. Next, we look at your pension and Social Security income, and finally, your savings and investments. As part of all this, we consider when you want to retire, your life expectancy, and your spouse's age and life expectancy, too. We look at inflation, taxes, and investment rates of return. And very important, we ask how you feel about leaving money to your kids and grandkids. There's a lot to consider, and if you've never tackled the topic of retirement security before, it can be a little intimidating. That's why you should come talk with us. At Edelman Financial Engines, we're experts at retirement planning, and we can help you make sure that your retirement is exactly what you want it to be, well-funded. So call us at Edelman Financial Engines, 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-PLAN-RICK. Or visit us at rickedelman.com. That's ricedelman.com. We're taking telephone calls here on the Rick Edelman Show off to Ventura, California. Jim's on the air. How you doing, Jim?
Oh, just fine, Rick. I really appreciate getting the chance to talk to you.
My pleasure. How can I help you?
Well, I am thoroughly confused on when I should start my Social Security benefit.
you're not the only one.
Well, this is just, it's so hard to get straight up information about all this. I'll give you a little history. I'm turning 65 this October. I'm still working. I plan to work probably another couple of years or so. And I understand if I do, I'm in that age group to where I can take Social Security at 66.
Right.
And I understand if I'm still working, my Social Security benefit will be reduced.
Right.
Is there a way to calculate how much it's going to be reduced based on my salary? Is it a percentage of my yearly gross or my
AGI? Or? It's roughly, well, let me back up. You're right, it's confusing. And in fact, you said a couple of things anecdotally that were not quite accurate, so let's just set the record straight. Social Security, as important as it is, as wonderful as it is extraordinarily, and in my view, unnecessarily complicated. You pay into the system throughout your entire working career. You reach a given age, you start to receive benefits. It ought to be that simple and easy. But hey, it's a government program, and therefore nothing is simple and easy. Here's what it comes down to. You're allowed to begin receiving retirement benefits starting at age 62. You don't have to wait until you're 65 or 66. You can start at 62.
But
you'll receive less, as you know. And so the longer you delay the start of benefits, the higher the benefit will be once you do start. There's an important phrase in Social Security circles called FRA, full retirement age. At your full retirement age, which is roughly age 66 for most working Americans, it's 66 in a few months and so on, depending on your actual birthday. Starting at around age 66, your full retirement age, you get your full 100% of your Social Security benefit. If you start to benefits prior to that, you get less than the full benefit. If you delay, you get more than the full benefit. If you wait until you're 70, you'll actually get 130% of your benefit. So instead of getting a dollar, you get $1.30 if you wait to age 70. So the real question is, when should I start? Should I take it starting at 62, even though it's less, but it's sooner? Or do I wait till I'm 70, which is more, but it's later? Part of the implication are taxes. Under the rules, if you're still working prior to your full retirement age, you will lose a lot of the income to taxes. After your full retirement age, that doesn't apply. So it certainly makes sense for you, if you don't really need the money, and it sounds like you don't because you're still working, that you should, in fact, delay, which is what you've been doing so far. And I would recommend that you continue delaying until you do, in fact, quit working.
Okay, so completely stop working and then take it then.
Or age 70, whichever comes first. Because after age 70, your benefit won't keep growing by delaying, so you might as well take it starting at age 70.
Right, yeah, and I printed out my Social Security statement, and I see what it is at 66, and then it's 8% every year up to age 70.
Right.
But I also know that if I wasn't working, if I stopped working at 66, but still delayed it, say, 1 year till 67 to get that extra 8%,
right.
It takes 12 and a half, I've done the math, it takes 12 and a half years to break even on missing that first year of payments.
Yes. So the real question for you is, how long are you going to live? Do you think you're going to live beyond age 75?
Well, that's the real crystal ball that everybody wishes they had.
How's your health?
Good.
And what's your family history? How long did your parents live?
In his 90s. My mom died at 70, unfortunately, but my dad's 91 and still going.
May I ask, what was your mother's cause of death?
It was complications due to Parkinson's. It was sepsis, but that's because she just became invalid.
Got it. And the reason I ask is that many of the illnesses that have caused people to die in the past have already been cured, and many others will be cured by the time you reach those advanced ages. So, you know, heart disease, respiratory illness, cancers themselves, and so on. So if your dad's already is still alive in his 90s and you're in good health today, I think you can anticipate with a reasonable degree of confidence that you're going to live well beyond 75 or 80 years of age, meaning it's worth the 1 year wait to get the higher benefit, because in your 80s and 90s, you'll be the beneficiary of the higher income thanks to the 1 year wait.
Okay. So just to recap then, if I took it before 66, there's heavy taxes on it. But from 66 on, there are no taxes?
That's correct. Prior to 66, about half of your benefit will be subject to taxes. After your full retirement age, that goes away.
Even if I'm still working?
Correct.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, everything I've read on this, I've never heard or never read something that says that. So once again, this is just so thoroughly confusing.
Well, it is, and it even gets more confusing than that because of the fact that you're married. Did your wife work?
She did up until she retired many, many years ago.
And is she collecting Social Security benefits?
She is not. She just turned 65 in August. So we're going to take hers next year.
So the question,
will hers be reduced if I'm working and she's not?
No, but here's the real question. Might it be possible that she would get a higher benefit as your spouse than based on her own work record?
I looked at that where she could take 50% of mine now, and no, the answer is no. Hers would be more than 50%.
And that's really the key, is that many people don't realize that spousal benefits are often higher than the worker benefits. So there's an implication for spouses. There's also an implication depending on the age disparity between the husband and the wife. Doesn't sound like your age disparity is all that significant.
Yeah. I looked into that, and, you know, if we were 10 years apart, she was 10 years younger than me, then it would be best that she went ahead and took it and, you know, upped it to the 50% of mine.
Exactly.
But no, she's actually 2 months older than me. So.
And then there are other issues if there's a divorce, which doesn't seem to apply to you. There are other issues if there's a widow, which doesn't apply to you. There are other issues if there are children under the age of 16. Are there?
No, one daughter, 30 years old.
So this just demonstrates the incredible complexity and why the answer, when should I take Social Security, depends on all of these factors. Are you still working? How long do you think you're going to live? Are you married? What's the age difference between you and your spouse? How much income are you earning? How much income is your spouse earning? Are there children under 16? Is there anybody with a disability, either you or your spouse? The list goes on and on and on of factors that affect the equation of helping us answer the question, when should you start to receive Social Security benefits? And it is not a one-size-fits-all, and that's why there's really no substitute for meeting with a financial advisor who can go through all of this in great detail for you to help make sure you're getting it right. Because as you know, Jim, once you make the decision, it's pretty much irreversible.
That's right.
So you got to get it right because you're living with it forever.
Yep. Yeah. So at least I'll wait till 66. And quite frankly, the reason I'm still working is because I've got a really generous 401k plan at my work. So I want to just keep socking as much as I can until I finally say, okay, that's enough.
And are you enjoying working?
Yeah, it's okay.
But you could give it up as well.
I could, yeah.
Okay. Therefore, what we need to do is some financial planning calculations to determine, do you have enough money saved between your 401k and other savings and investments, plus the income you'll get from Social Security? Is all of that enough to support you and your wife for as long as you and your wife are expected to live? Because if the answer to that is yes, then there's no reason to keep working an extra year or two merely to increase the balance of the 401k to produce income that is already sufficient to meet your lifestyle needs, and you might as well just quit now and enjoy yourselves.
That is true. Yeah.
So I would argue that you should meet with a financial advisor who can do some retirement planning calculations for you to test the theory. How long do, in fact, you need to continue working? You said you're going to do it for another year or two. We may conclude you can retire right now. We may conclude you need to keep working not one or two more years, but three or four more years.
Okay.
In other words, let's do the math.
Okay, that's great advice. Yeah, because I know there's – I forget what they call it, but there's a certain number that you you can figure out what how much you have in your investments and what you can draw on it comfortably to not deplete it, and then – you know, be able to maintain your lifestyle.
Well, there's no particular name for it, but the bottom line is we want to know that there's enough money in your piggy bank coupled with Social Security to provide you with retirement income for as long as the two of you are expected to live. And we've got an office not far from Ventura, California, so we're happy to help you and go through these calculations for you. That's what we do as financial planners, helping people realize, based on where you're at, based on how much money you've got, how much money you're at continuing to save, where that money is invested, how long you're expected to live, how much money you need on a monthly basis, here's when you can retire. It's either right now, or it's never, or it's somewhere in between.
All righty. Well, that's all great advice, and I really appreciate getting the chance to talk to you because this is just so confusing.
It is confusing, all the more so for folks who have never dealt with it before. And you know, we deal with it every single day, and so we're pretty good at it. You've dealt with it once, and you're not as good at it as we are, although you seem to have a pretty good handle on this stuff, so that puts you ahead of the curve. So give us a call if we can help. Same phone number you dialed here today, 888-PLAN-RICK, and we're happy to help you, Jim.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you so much, Rick.
You're very welcome. You can do the same thing Jim did. Call us at 888-752-6742. Let's confirm your assumptions. Let's make sure you are, in fact, on track to achieve your goals. And we'll give you the advice you need so you can have the peace of mind you're looking for. 888-PLAN-RICK online at rickedelman.com.
Doesn't come with instructions. More of your questions coming up on The Rick Edelman Show.
Welcome back to the program. Rick Edelman here. Thanks for sticking around with me during the holiday season. We're heading off to Bethesda, Maryland. Patrick's with us on the air. How you doing, Patrick?
Great. Thanks for taking my call, Rick.
My pleasure. How can I help?
So I recently met with some financial advisors from a large firm arranged by my employer and had a question or a concern about what they had suggested. During our conversation, one of the advisors suggested that I might be a good candidate for a quote-unquote shield that was described to me as an annuity based on what he called an index fund chassis, which I didn't really understand. The way it was described was that the advantage is that there are literally no fees and the fund would protect me or make me whole, he said, if the market declines by up to 10%, which he referred to as a shield 10, but it also would cap my gains if after a certain point, but I don't think he specified what that point was. And their suggestion was that it might be a good idea to move funds from my TSP, which is about half of my retirement portfolio of around $750,000, into this type of a product. So I think I've heard you talk about something like this before, and I just wanted to know if that would make any sense, or should I head for the hills, or is there any reason why I would want to move TSP funds somewhere other than the TSP?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right that you want to head for the hills with this sales pitch. This is a convoluted, jargon-filled, manipulative description of a very basic product. He's describing an annuity. And he didn't want to say that. He didn't want to call it just an annuity, because annuities have a bad reputation, and rightly so. And so he gave you all kinds of jargon that was designed to bamboozle you. An index fund chassis. I don't even know what the heck that is. A shield. I mean, this is what is this? The Marvels? I mean, is this the Avengers? I don't even know what the guy's talking about. The bottom line is this. He's giving you a very bizarre, poorly formed explanation of a very basic product, a product that has significant negative attributes in my view. First, the product does indeed shield you from stock market losses. Well, so does a bank CD. You know, I mean, the fact that it's not invested in stocks, that's why you're shielded from them. And because you're not invested in stocks, you're not going to get the returns of the stock market. As he mentioned to you, there's a cap on the maximum amount of money that this product is going to provide you at any given moment. But here's the craziest part of the whole thing. Your money is currently in a retirement account. You work for the federal government, and you have your money in the federal thrift savings plan. The money invested there is at the moment completely tax deferred, meaning you don't pay any taxes on the money in your thrift account until you withdraw the money in retirement. And the thrift account is the cheapest retirement account in the country by virtue of the fact it's offered by the federal government. Costs are extraordinarily low. They're no lower anywhere else in the financial marketplace. You know what the number one benefit of an annuity is?
I have no idea.
Tax deferral. When you put money into a mutual fund, you have to pay taxes every year on the profits. But if you put money into an annuity, the profits are tax deferred until withdrawal. Does that sound familiar? Tax deferred until withdrawal?
Sure.
It's the same thing as your thrift account. In other words, taking the money out of a thrift account, which is tax deferred until withdrawal, to move it into an annuity, which is tax deferred until withdrawal, isn't giving you any benefit. But what you are doing is generating massive new levels of fees, which is the most astonishing part of his entire sales pitch. When he said to you, there are virtually no costs, he's an outright liar. Annuities are laden with expenses. How do you think he's earning the 10% commission he's going to get when you buy this thing? Where's that 10% coming from? Hint. It's you. So I think you're absolutely right. He's not offering you any particular arguments that would encourage me to say, yes, it's a great idea and you really ought to go do it. But I want to go backwards a little bit. You work for the federal government, yes?
I did. I don't anymore.
And you said that this meeting was set up via your employer.
My current employer. That's correct.
Your current employer, different from the federal government.
Not a government agency.
All right, so let me get this straight. So you used to work for the federal government, right?
That's correct.
You now work for a private employer.
Correct.
And the private employer set up a meeting with employees and this financial advisor.
That's correct.
And this financial advisor, let me guess, works for an insurance company.
Yes, that's correct.
And in the course of this retirement planning seminar, suggested that you take the money from your retirement plan at the federal government and roll it over to this annuity product.
That's correct.
All right. You should go to your employer on Monday and tell whoever it was, probably the HR department, tell them that you spoke to me, and I told you to tell them that they need to do a much better job at vetting the people that they permit into the company to solicit employees with really bad advice that is filled with conflict of interest, lack of disclosure, and fundamentally not serving the employee's best interests.
That is exactly what I thought.
Because I don't think your boss realizes what's going on. I don't think they realize that they just opened the hen house and invited the fox inside.
Well, I don't think our HR department are necessarily financial experts, so
of course
I agree
not.
With you on that.
Yeah, that's the point. That was they didn't do this maliciously. They were trying hard to provide their workers with helpful financial info, and they didn't realize that the person that they were inviting in isn't an objective fee-based financial advisor, doesn't have a reputation as a financial educator, and instead was inviting a mutual fund salesman, or in this case, they were inviting an annuity salesman to come in and make an annuity sales pitch to their workers. That's not what I think your employer had in mind when they set this meeting up.
I'm sure they didn't.
Yeah. So they'd be happy to hear the feedback that you'll provide to them because they want to do a better job. And here's the exciting part. Employers are more and more devoted to the subject of financial security for their employees. Health and wellness is a thing that employers have been dealing with a long time. They've offered seminars on improving your diet and quit smoking and get better exercise. And now they're recognizing that workers also need help with their personal finances. And so health wellness is now broadening to also financial wellness, which is wonderful. The problem is the employers aren't experts in this, and they don't necessarily know who to turn to invite into the firm. And this is a big deal for us because we're the nation's largest independent provider of investment advice to 401k plans. Here at Edelman Financial Engines, we work with more than 6,200 employers all around the country providing financial education, the kind that you should be getting, not the veiled sales pitches designed to produce big fat commissions in the sale of insurance products. And so it always drives me crazy when I hear stories like yours, Patrick, because we know there's a better way. It could be done so much superior to what your experience was. And you were smart enough to detect the problems. I wonder how many of your colleagues sitting around that room were just mesmerized by the fancy sales pitch and ended up making a decision that is not in their best interest.
Well, I'm the beneficiary of my mother who gave me a signed copy of The Truth About Money many years ago, and I've been listening to you for a long time, and that's why I thought to call. So
well,
thank you.
I appreciate that very much. I'm really glad you enjoyed my book, my very first book that I wrote nearly 20 years ago, and so I'm really glad you enjoyed it. So, Patrick, thank you for calling. I'm glad you had your radar up. You're absolutely right in your suspicion, and I'm glad I was able to confirm it for you.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. I'm Rick Edelman. It's been a pleasure being with you. Have a fabulous weekend and a wonderful New Year's. Wonderful prosperity and health and happiness to you and yours. And I only get to say this once a year. I'll see you next year. And that's a wrap.
As a reward, you'll have no radio for the rest of the week. Go to your room.
Get the truth about money every weekend on The Rick Edelman Show.